How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 40 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can head on to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there. You can also leave a review if you're feeling like it. You find us on audioboom.com also. You can go to normantranscript.com to follow my Thunder coverage as well. I'm going to be talking with Locked On Magic host Philip Rossman-Reich a little later in the show. Obviously, the Thunder and Magic, they're not really a natural match, but for crossover week at the Locked On Podcast Network, there's clearly something to discuss here in our crossover with Locked On Thunder and Locked On Magic, and that's the Serge Ibaka trade, of course. We're going to be going over expectations for Ibaka in Orlando and ones for Victor Oladipo and Ersan Ilyasova in Oklahoma City also. And we're also going to be doing the general expectations after the Thunder and Magic made that draft day trade back in June. Remember, I'm on every day of the week now, off weekends, but shows Monday through Friday. I promise you, I'm not suspended, but I can't say the same for one guy on the Thunder. That's Mitch McGarry, and that brings us to our lead story of today. Mitch McGarry is suspended for an additional 10 games to start the season. That makes it a 15-game suspension for McGarry to start the year. Quick background. In case you missed it, the NBA announced McGarry would be suspended for an additional 10 games this year on top of the 5 he was already suspended for to start the season. The suspension was originally reported by who else? Adrian Wojnarowski of The Vertical. That's 15 games, though, for McGarry to begin the year. 15 games of no pay for a guy on a rookie-scale deal. He makes $1.5 million this year, by the by, though he's losing 15 games worth of salary now. I couldn't believe the suspension when it happened, to be honest. And maybe I'm naive, but I couldn't believe it. So, a little more background. Woj reported the suspension was not because of another positive test. McGarry was originally suspended back in July. He was suspended for the first 5 games of the regular season after a positive test for marijuana. That was his third positive test with the league for marijuana. And keep in mind, the penalty for a fourth positive test and another positive test for McGarry obviously would have been a fourth positive test. The penalty for a fourth positive test is a 10-game suspension. So this additional 10 games does match the penalty, even though it's not necessarily for another positive test. So McGarry's 5-game suspension was for a third positive test. The penalties for your first 2 positive tests. The first one, you get an automatic enrollment in the NBA's marijuana program. For the second positive test, the marijuana program enrollment, again, and a $25,000 fine. Third time, that's when you get the 5-game suspension. You're also enrolled in the NBA's marijuana program again. But Woj says this time the extra 10 games are not from another positive test. Instead, they're from, and here's the exact quote, failure to live up to the procedural guidelines set forth in the program. It's the NBA's marijuana program. Now, McGarry has had off-the-court issues before. He had the 5-game suspension enforced earlier this summer. That'll come the first 5 games of the regular season, the additional 10 now. He had the marijuana-related suspension when he was at Michigan, which would have suspended him for his junior year had he not actually entered the draft after his sophomore year. He left the Thunder for personal reasons. Late in the regular season this year, he returned in time for the playoffs. Now, this is a tough line to tread. As you can probably tell, I'm kind of beating around the bush a little, and that's because drug issues are tough. It's impossible to know if someone is just irresponsible or if someone has like an actual problem without really knowing that person well. And sometimes even if you do know that person well, but it can be a close friend or a family member, you still might not know that person has an issue. These issues are hard to assess. And look, I've always been of the mindset that the NBA shouldn't suspend for marijuana. Major League Baseball doesn't suspend for marijuana. There's a great piece. I forget who wrote it. It might have been Jeff Passan over at Yahoo. It's a great piece about how minor league players, because minor league players get suspended for smoking marijuana. It was written, I think, 2 years ago. It was about minor league players trying to smoke their way to the big leagues, because if they got put on the 40-man roster, then they couldn't be suspended for marijuana anymore. It's a great piece. It's worth reading. I don't think that the NBA should suspend for marijuana. It's legal in multiple states. It's decriminalized in way more states than it's actually recreationally legal in. It's legal medically in a ton of states. It's not a physically addictive substance. Physically is obviously the operative word in that sentence. The issues that stem from it aren't as bad as the ones that stem from alcohol, which is a legal substance, obviously. It doesn't necessarily spur violence or anything like that. You've heard the arguments a million times over. And I'm not arguing that players shouldn't be suspended or disciplined, or it should be condoned to, you know, drive while you smoke marijuana. But I do think that the NBA shouldn't suspend for it. And you've heard the arguments for it a million times, and it's become a taboo topic in society. Anyway, I'm still wary about knocking a guy who could have a problem, because I do believe that you can have a problem. Just because someone won't develop a physical addiction to weed doesn't mean you can't actually have a problem. It doesn't mean there can't be a habitual one. It doesn't mean you can't be overly reliant on it. But I still kind of can't believe in the situation McGarry is in that he put himself in this position. I was really shocked by that. He's not hurting anyone other than himself, but the Thunder have 16 players and a surplus of bigs. Someone's gonna go. Someone has to go, and it's probably going to be a big man. And McGarry is putting himself in a bad position. I was surprised to see that happen. We don't know what the procedural breach was, and McGarry did have to be in the marijuana program, but I couldn't believe it. I'm not sure how much a 5-game suspension hurt his trade value, honestly. Those first 5-game suspensions, I don't know. He showed up out of shape last year. He wasn't exactly looking like Schwarzenegger all of last year, you know? He spent a lot of time in the D League. He took a step back. The trade value wasn't massive to begin with. But I don't know if testing that positive for weed, even a third time, enough for a 5-game suspension, I don't know if that kills trade value. I just don't know if executives in the NBA think like that. But this issue, maybe it turns an organization. Maybe the 10-game suspension turns an organization who was maybe considering giving up a little bit to try to get him. Maybe it could turn that organization away. Just because if this is going to be a recurring issue, you know, if this is going to be something where McGarry isn't going to cooperate in trying to better himself, an organization just may not want to have to clean up the mess. I wonder what that says for McGarry's future, because whether he stays or goes, this suspension, these extra 10 games, they're going to affect his basketball life down the road.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily Oklahoma City Thunder podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
More crossover week stuff now. Let's welcome in Locked On Magic host, or in his case, he'll be welcoming me in, Philip Rossman-Reich. What's going on?
Not too much. Counting down the days. We got 2 weeks till training camp opens, right?
Less now. Even less. This is going up on Wednesday, so we got 12 days. 12 days, according to the timely listener, the one who delays it, even less time.
Yeah, so I envy that person in the future who's closer to the beginning of training camp than we are right now.
It's exciting. We're just talking about the idea of basketball. We're talking about hypothetical basketball and what might happen and what might be, and we're going to be talking about like real basketball very soon.
Yeah, I'm sure with the changes that the Thunder have gone through, and certainly with the changes the Magic have gone through, I'm tired of talking about theory. I want to see some practice. I want to see the team get together, go through some workout, and then I actually want to see a preseason game, an honest to goodness preseason game, just to get some data on our teams right now. It's been a lot of head scratching so far.
Well, you've got in my estimation, you've got one of the more difficult teams in the league to figure out, I think.
So, it certainly helped fill some content this summer.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely going to be a fun team to write about. There's no question about that. But let's talk about the stuff that we actually came here for. So if you're listening to this and you're wondering what the heck do the Magic and the Thunder have to do with each other, not that much, except for the fact that, in case you were tuned out, they did make a trade this summer. Yeah, that happened all the way back in June. Did you know that, Phil?
It was a you know, minor trade, a few random spare parts being traded apart. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if people hadn't heard about it. But it's the NBA. People want to talk about this minutia.
So just a summary in case, you forgot some of the parts or whatever it is. I assume if you're listening to this podcast, you know that Serge Ibaka was traded to the Magic, because if you're a Thunder fan and are unaware of that, then you've been tuned out for a little while. But the Thunder sent Serge Ibaka to the Magic on draft night, June 24th, 25th, whenever the heck that was. And they received back Victor Oladipo, Ersan Ilyasova, and the 20-year-old who was the 11th overall pick that evening, Domantas Sabonis. So today, Philip and I, we're going to talk about the deal. And more relevantly, we're going to talk about expectations for the players involved and kind of how we think that their games can change and adjust to new systems, new teams, new cities, all that fun stuff. And first, let's get to the biggest name involved, Serge Ibaka. Now, Ibaka had a great Thunder career, 7 years long, multiple all-defense team, twice leading the league in blocks. Now he's likely going to be a bigger part of the Magic offense than he was in OKC. And what are your expectations for Ibaka this year, kind of heading into a totally new situation in a new uniform?
The first thing I expect from Serge Ibaka is for his defense to kind of return to the levels that it was at when he was an all-defensive player. I mean, I think it doesn't take – you don't have to go very far to kind of see that his defensive numbers, his rebounding, his block shots, even his defensive win shares and defensive box plus minus have all been precipitously heading down. And the reason for that still seems a bit of a mystery, I think, to a lot of people, because clearly he went out in the playoffs, especially in that San Antonio and that Golden State Warriors series, and was a true difference maker on the defensive end. And so he still has that in him. And so why it seemed to suddenly decrease so significantly is, I think, one of the bigger mysteries that Magic fans at least have been trying to figure out. And certainly with the way this team is structured and the identity the Magic want to have and the coach that they went out and hired, everything has been about the defensive end for the Magic. And so bringing in a guy like Serge Ibaka is kind of the centerpiece, pun intended, for the team's offseason acquisitions, I think, was – certainly a statement that they believe Ibaka can get back to becoming an all-defensive player. Now, on the offensive end, I also think that they expect him to bump up his scoring a lot more, and I actually expect them to use him in a way that Oklahoma City never really did. His usage rate was never better than 20%. He was kind of the sense that I had was that he was kind of turned into a spot-up shooter offensively and didn't get a chance to really grow his offensive game. I don't know how you feel about that at all and whether he can take on a larger offensive role, but I think the Magic are going to be expecting him to do that as well.
Yeah, I think there's no question. I know the Magic have told him that they're giving him a bigger offensive role. Now, the Thunder kind of told him that they were going to give him a bigger offensive role before last year too, and that fell off. He had one of his lowest usage rates in really his lowest usage rates since he had become kind of a focal part of the offense and kind of the third banana on the team, 4 or 5 years ago, whenever that was. I think it was 2011. And it was his lowest usage rate since then. And if you look at his usage rate throughout games last year, I mean, he would touch the ball in first quarters, but you look at his usage rate throughout games and in fourth quarters, his numbers would just totally fall off in terms of touches, in terms of usage, in terms of shot attempts, whatever kind of metric you want to go by. He just was not getting the ball at all, and he wasn't getting his shots off in fourth quarters. Those touches were going to Kevin Durant, and they were going to Russell Westbrook, and they weren't going to him. I think that's a part of his defense. I mean, let's talk about his defense first, because when we talk about Serge Ibaka, like, no matter how comfortable he'll be in that offense, whether you think that he's going to excel and reach a new level offensively, or whether you think he's going to fall off and there's going to be some sort of Peter principle he's not going to be able to handle having a bigger role in the offense, whether you think that, Serge Ibaka is a defensive-minded player. I mean, we're talking about a guy who, had arguments for beyond all defense for Defensive Player of the Year for a stretch that lasted a few years, and he fell off a little bit last year. And let's ignore, or at least you don't have to, but I'm going to ignore the he might not be as old, he might be older than people say he is argument, because I'm not a birth certificate expert and I don't know. But so I won't even factor that into my logic. But there are theories over Ibaka wanting the ball more, which he did want the ball more, and that was one of the reasons why the Thunder were comfortable trading him, because Ibaka, disgruntled is the wrong word, because that makes it seem like he was causing problems, which I've got no indications that he was. But he wasn't pleased with his offensive role. He wanted the ball more just because he's a competitor. And, you know, that's been pretty confirmed. I mean, Billy Donovan basically talked about that openly on his podcast with Adrian Wojnarowski at the Vertical. I mean, that was a pretty open conversation about Serge. And you hear things, you know, from people who don't want their names on the record just about how Serge wanted the ball. And even ones who do, I mean, his agent, Andy Miller, came out and spoke to people after and talked about how Serge wanted the ball more. And that was something that kind of pushed for this trade. And that can affect a guy on the defensive end. And Serge alluded to that a little bit during the season after a Toronto game earlier this year. He talked about how not getting the ball can, you know, he's not the only player like that. You have not getting the ball.
I mean, Dwight Howard's been like that.
Yeah. So I used to write about the Clippers, and when DeAndre Jordan was early in his career, this was the Vinny Del Negro era, but about, what was it, the 2012 season, Vinny Del Negro, first play of every single game, used to give a DeAndre Jordan post-up. Every single game, first play, because he needed, like, we would call them his cup of coffee plays, because they'd wake him up. And they actually get him to play hard on defense. Now, DeAndre's not like that anymore. That's part of why Doc Rivers is a good coach. Got him to play like that without needing the ball on offense. He still gets him to go like an animal on defense. But a lot of players are like that. And I wonder if just getting the ball back on offense a lot is going to kind of change his defensive game just from a mentality standpoint. Because he was locked in during that Warriors series. He was great during the Golden State series.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's a really good point. I mean, as much as that we think there are these defensive-minded players, it's really, really rare, I think, to find a guy who is so focused on the defensive end that he doesn't want to score. I mean, I think Magic fans, I think, are really familiar with this. I think part of Dwight Howard's downfall for much of his career was he had all these people in his head, all these people in his ear, whether it was Shaq, whether it was his people, whether it was himself and his ego, telling him, you need to be scoring the ball, you need to play a certain way, and that affected his defense. I mean, I think any player like that, you can see when, you know, they're ignored and because big men can't take the ball up and get the ball themselves, they need someone to give them the ball. When they're ignored, they get a little frustrated. I think it's only human. And so that doesn't surprise me that Ibaka feels ready to do a little bit more. And you know, I think Orlando is going to give him something of an opportunity to do that because the roster is really bereft of reliable scorers, you know, a lot of shooting. I think the Magic kind of consider Ibaka one of their 3-point shooters at this point. And they need someone to take the reins. And I think on certain nights, it's going to be Ibaka who's going to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're also going to run a little more stuff through him. Now, I'm not saying they're going to turn him into a 30% usage guy, but I think we're going to see moments where they run some stuff through him because let's face it, there still are not a ton of shooters on this team. I mean, a lot of the bigs are the better shooters. Like Vucevic is a really good shooter out to, you know, 22, and I wonder how that big man rotation is going to work. But Jeff Green is inconsistent. He'll hit 5 threes in a game, and you know he'll put up 0 points in a game. You know, Payton's not a shooter at guard. Fournier is a good shooter. But the shooting is kind of unevenly distributed. It's better than it was a couple years ago on that Magic team. But if Ibaka is going to shoot the ball from three like he did a couple years ago, he's certainly one of the best 3-point shooters on that team.
And I think that's honestly like my big question about Serge Ibaka coming into the season is it really felt like Oklahoma City was using him mostly as a traditional stretch four. And I wonder how that affected his development as an offensive game because his 3-point field goal attempts from 2014 to 2015 went up to from 0.7 to 3.2. He was shooting about 2.5 per game last year. How much has the stretch four phenomenon affected him on both ends of the floor? Because I think pulling him away from the basket affected him, you know, with other power forwards has affected his ability to defend or at least how we track defense. Is he maybe better off playing center and displacing Vucevic or can he still play four in this league?
You know, Billy Donovan had an interesting quote earlier this year when people talked about he acknowledged that Serge wasn't quite as good defensively this year as he'd been in the past. And Billy had a theory, which was that as the league becomes kind of more stretched out and basically not basically everyone, but a lot of teams, a lot more than they did, you know, 3-4 years ago, a lot of teams run, you know, a 1-in-4-out offense. Serge, when he plays the four, is pulled away from the basket a lot more on defense. And that's something that could make him a little bit worse on defense, because while for a big man, he's really good guarding in space and he's really good switching out the wings and he's just an all around versatile defender, his best trait as a defender is keeping him around the rim where he can block shots and protect the rim and keep guys out of the paint and all that fun stuff, which he's so good at. And that's what his, you know, he's got value everywhere on defense, but that's what his, where his greatest value is on defense. And, you know, I think defensively, he actually works better in today's game as a five. And offensively, I think if you can play him at the five, he works best. Now, you'll have a smarter opinion on this than I will, just because you cover the Magic, but they have Biombo and they have Vucevic. How often is he really going to be playing the five with them? I mean, I guess there's situations where that can happen, but like, how many minutes are we going to see with Ibaka at the five and say Aaron Gordon at the four this year with the Magic just going with a more traditionally small lineup?
I mean, that was the lineup I was telling everyone, like draft night, you know, when we were just trying to figure out what this deal means, I was like, they've got to be going Gordon Ibaka as their 4-5 next year. And I don't know what that means for Vucevic, but That's the direction I'd go, because that's the direction the league is going. And I think that would be still a very effective defensive lineup. But I think we'll see the Gordon Ibaka lineup for small stretches. There's, you know, been kind of the Ringer posted that article with proposed death lineups. And I think that Gordon Ibaka pairing was one of the ideas they had for a quote unquote Magic death lineup, like the Warriors have. But I think we'll see it, but it won't be very prominent, you know, maybe probably less than 10 minutes per game. I think we'll see Ibaka there. I think the Magic are willing to experiment with Vucevic some at the four, especially if he can extend his shooting range like he says he's been trying to this summer. And I think even Frank Vogel has hinted at Nikola Vucevic taking some three-pointers. But that center logjam is so hard to figure out because – yes, you paid a lot of money for Bismack Biyombo. You feel like you've got to play him. Vucevic has established himself. He's probably the most consistent offensive player on the team right now. And so it's tough to figure out where Ibaka fits into that and whether he's going to be a four and really nothing more than kind of a pick and pop guy rather than the guy who attacks the basket on pick and rolls or gets post ups. The good news is if you play him with Vucevic, Vucevic can also step out and hit the jumper and space the floor a little bit as a big. And so that means Ibaka should get more post touches and shouldn't just be kind of stuck on the perimeter as a player. And so I think that's definitely a way to advance his career, because Ibaka's played for the most of his career with Kendrick Perkins and Steven Adams, and neither of those guys are much use to anyone if they're not inside the paint on offense. And so I think that necessitated Ibaka moving away from the basket. I mean, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong on that observation.
No, I think you're right. Quick observation of my own, or I should say comment of my own, and then I have a question for you. First of all, the Magic are going to have one of my favorite lineups in the NBA this year. Because when they play Payton, whoever the two, let's say Fournier, Payton, Gordon, Biyombo, and Ibaka, I'm not sure that there are going to be points scored on either side in that game.
Yes.
And I'm so excited for the ugliness that lineup is going to facilitate. It's going to be awesome. It's going to look like, you know, when you watch Las Vegas Summer League and it goes to sudden death and double overtime automatically, that's what it's going to look like all the time.
The Magic are very much the anti-Warriors in so many ways. Like they have this weird funky lineup that should be able to switch just about everything defensively, but they're not going to be able to score at all. I mean, it's going to be really interesting to watch them. And I think that, you know, the situation the Magic are in, they've missed the playoffs the last 4 years. They're desperate to make the playoffs. And I think they've just kind of gambled that, you know, offense will figure itself out. These are NBA players. They'll figure out how to score enough points. If we can play good enough defense, historically, that gets you in. I mean, I think last year, 10 of the top 11 teams by defensive rating made the playoffs. And the only team that didn't was Utah Jazz, which finished a game out of the playoffs. So I think they've kind of made this gamble that if we can just be one of the best defenses in the league, more likely than not, we'll scrounge up enough offense to make the playoffs. And like you said, they could run some really funky lineups out there that will stop everyone and not score at all either. And they can even run some lineups out there that can be really interesting. It wouldn't surprise me if they run Aaron Gordon at center some, especially with like Golden State goes to their small lineup. Or, I mean, Ibaka certainly can play center in that lineup too. And so I think they feel like they have a lot of versatility to defend just about anyone at any time. And the offense will figure itself out eventually.
Frank Vogel coaching too. One of the best defensive minds in the league. Wonderful coach. I think he's a great coach. What are so one more Ibaka question. We'll move on to the Thunder guys. You think he makes an all-star team this year?
I think, you know, honestly, like when the trade was made, I said it's very possible that Ibaka becomes the Magic's all-star. He's the way I described it when the Magic made the deal was they traded for someone with an elite skill, and that's something they haven't had since Dwight Howard left. Ibaka is one of the best, can be one of the best defenders in the league. And essentially, for the Magic to get a player on the All-Star team, it's going to be because it's a team reward. The Magic are in the playoff hunt at the All-Star break or near the All-Star break when those votes are tallied, and the coaches feel like they've got to send someone to New Orleans. And so I think it's very possible that Ibaka is that guy because of the impact he can make on the defensive end. He'll be a big linchpin of what the Magic are going to do. And so it wouldn't surprise me if he's getting all-star consideration if the Magic play well. If the Magic, you know, flame out, then no one's going to get all-star consideration on this team.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, that's certainly true. I think he has a really good chance at doing it. I mean, look, there's always that kind of random big who would never make it in the Western Conference. And Ibaka's never made an all-star team, which is a little surprising. But there's always that random big who always kind of sneaks in the Eastern Conference, whether it's Roy Hibbert or maybe a couple of years ago, Paul Millsap. And Millsap is not random anymore. But, you know, he was at the time of like, oh, well, Paul Millsap made an all-star team. I think Ibaka could be that guy. If he's averaging, you know, 18-9 and he's playing killer defense and he's got high block numbers, which you know, people like to see in all-star games. I think that's a distinct possibility, and the Magic are playing good basketball, and I think it's a real possibility. I think he's at least the most likely guy on that team to make it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. If the Magic are playing well, it's because Ibaka has taken a leap. You know, maybe I'll give an outside chance to Aaron Gordon. I'm not ready to bet on what Aaron Gordon's stats are going to be this year because he could still be just about anything. But, you know, if Gordon takes a huge leap up, you know, maybe he gets into that conversation. But Ibaka to me is the most consistent guy, the most reliable guy, the guy that I feel most comfortable saying he's going to play better just because he's getting more opportunity.
So let's talk some Victor Oladipo.
Let's talk some Victor Oladipo.
You saw him play over the first few years of his career. He had some ups. He had some downs. He had, in my opinion, a strong close to last season. He seems to be better when he works better. Can he kind of be the ball dominant guy? How do you see him working next to Russell Westbrook if we assume he's going to be in the Thunder starting lineup?
Yeah, I think that's a really good role for him. I think what the Magic were asking him to do, he just wasn't quite capable of doing. And I'm a big believer that a lot of players in the league, you know, that there's a lot of really good players in the league, but a lot of them are kind of miscast in roles that they can't fulfill. And for the Magic, he had to be the guy. He had to be the one who scored the most points and dominated the ball. And that isn't quite who he is, at least for a winning team. And so I think pairing him with a Russell Westbrook is going to benefit him greatly. I think he's, you know, I was talking about this yesterday with the Locked On Heat guys as we were kind of discussing what the Magic did this summer. And I really believe this was a win-win trade for both teams. Even before the Durant stuff, I thought Oladipo coming off the bench as a sixth man would be a big upgrade over Dion Waiters. And he'd be able to do a lot of things he did in Orlando that made people think he could be an all-star off the bench for Oklahoma City and kind of give them that scoring punch off the bench that they've really lacked since James Harden left. Now, Durant's obviously not there anymore, but even so, I still think, you know, Oladipo can relieve some pressure off of Russell Westbrook as far as ball handling. He can attack that, be another attacker to set other people up. His assist numbers are pretty solid. He's got, you know, the Magic tried him out at point guard for a year and a half or so. And even though it was clear he wasn't a point guard, getting those skills benefits him for his career. And I think he'll be able to set up Westbrook well. I think they'll be able to play off each other well. Obviously, the shooting is still a concern for both. But having another guy who can attack off the dribble, create his own shot is really, really valuable. I just don't think Oladipo can be your number one guy, but as maybe a number two guy for this Oklahoma City team, City Thunder team, where Westbrook's getting a lot of the attention, I think that's going to be really interesting to see, and I think Oladipo is going to benefit a lot from it.
I think that's a really interesting point you just made, because I don't think Oladipo is a point guard either. He's certainly not a natural point guard, and he's probably not the guy I want as my number one facilitator moving forward, but I think he's got really good facilitation skills for a secondary creator. And I think that's a really interesting point that you just made about how, yeah, he may not be a full-time point guard, but he gained a lot of skills over that year and a half-ish playing point guard in Orlando that can help him a lot down the line. I think we're probably going to see him running the second unit a decent amount, where they might stagger his minutes and have him on the second unit. I think a lot of that has to do with how good campaign actually ends up being, how ready he is for this season. Because if he's inconsistent this year like he was last year, the Thunder are going to need somebody running that second unit. And I think we probably might see him doing that a decent amount. I also imagine that guarding Russell Westbrook and Victor Oladipo is just going to be exhausting for opposing backcourts. Like, those two are explosive, they're big, they're physical, they're fast. I mean, that's going to be tough to keep up with them, to bang with them, to keep them out of the paint, to keep them out of transition. Like, that's going to be exhausting for opposing teams. I feel like they could just almost like a really physical defense in football will just wear down, you know, we'll just wear down receivers or wear down a running back or whatever it is who's getting a lot of carries throughout a game, and you just kind of see him fall off in the fourth quarter. I could see Westbrook and Oladipo doing a similar thing to where they maintain their energy levels throughout an entire game, and they do it on the offensive end, and they maintain their energy levels throughout an entire game, and they just relentlessly keep attacking the paint and relentlessly keep getting out in transition because they're both kind of gamblers on the defensive end, and there are going to be games where they both get a lot of steals, and they'll be able to get out running pretty organically in that way. And I could just see them tiring out backcourts and tiring out teams by the end of games.
Yeah, and I think that's a really big thing that Oladipo can do. He's a lot of boundless energy and sometimes out of control energy. I think that's one thing he has to continue to learn how to do is learn how to kind of control his pace and his speed, especially as he gets closer to the basket and attack. But Oladipo and Westbrook are two players that are just constantly on the attack. That's what they do, and that's what they do well. And I think that's why this is a good fit, even though, you know, Oladipo is a career 33% shooter, only, you know, shot 34.8% from three last year. But even – and Westbrook, you know, I know it's kind of around that number two. But even though they can't necessarily spread the floor, they put a lot of pressure on defenses because they both can get to the basket pretty much when they want or as close to when they want as they can. Obviously, Westbrook's probably better at that than Oladipo. Defensively, if they can, if Donovan, and I know from watching Billy Donovan so much, I grew up a Florida Gator, so I've watched plenty of Billy Donovan basketball. He loves pressing, trapping defenses. I don't know how much he can do to get away with that in the NBA, but Oladipo and Westbrook kind of fit the mold of that guard that he really liked at Florida, so they can get up into people and really put pressure on ball handlers, and force turnovers to get out in transition. So I think that's a really good fit all around for Oladipo, and definitely a big opportunity for him, I think, in a role that fits him better than what Orlando could give him.
I think that is going to happen with their defense, honestly. I just can I be arrogant and plug
something? Oh, be arrogant, please.
I literally wrote that article like 72 hours ago about how the Thunder defense could be one of the most stylistically aggressive ones in the league this year, just because you've got Westbrook and Oladipo at the top of the defense, basically trapping on pick and rolls and extending far beyond the 3-point line. And the thing is, you know, those guys are going to gamble, whether you work that into the principles of your defense or not. That's just who they are at this point. So you might as well embrace it instead of trying to stifle it and then messing up your defense when they do it anyway. So
exactly. And you have a good, you know, you have a good backstop in Steven Adams. I mean, I think a big reason why the Thunder felt comfortable trading Ibaka
too.
And Robertson is a good defender too. I mean, you've got some pieces. You've got the defense that allows you to do that. I mean, I think, you know, bringing it back to the Magic a little bit, I think a big problem the Magic had defensively, and Oladipo even had somewhat defensively, was, you know, he could push up a little bit, but if he got beat on a pick and roll, Nikola Vucevic just isn't a rim protector to stop them going downhill. And so I think going to Oklahoma City, where there's a better defensive group around him, is going to unleash Oladipo even more defensively. And he's already a very, very good defender. I mean, I think that was kind of his reputation coming into the league, and he's gotten better and better and better. And even through some of the struggles he had with Scott Skiles said, I think Oladipo is an all defensive team player. And I think he just wasn't in a situation where he could really show that to its fullest extent.
Yeah. I think he's going to have a really good year this year.
I do too.
I think we're going to see the best year he's ever had. I mean, I thought about that last year. I've always liked his game. I thought that he was going to be really good last year. He got off to a slow start. There were you know, as you very well know, there were kind of inconsistencies in him working next to Elfrid Payton. I think he's going to be really good, if only because he's going to consistently get opportunities every single night, no matter what, because there's nobody else to take them on this team. So even if he gets off to a slow start, it's not like there's going to be a Scott Skiles to move him to the bench and mess him around. And granted, he was pretty good when he came off the bench this year, but it's not like they're going to jerk him around in and out of rotations, or you're going to mess around with minutes or mess around with touches or mess around with opportunities. Like, Victor Oladipo is going to consistently get touches and get opportunities because he's the guy to do it. Like, there's not a wing to where they can give the ball and have them take it away. Like, Andre Robertson's not going to get the ball and they're going to say, okay, well, Oladipo's not doing it, give it to Robertson, or Oladipo's not going to do it, give it to Singler, or give it to, you know, whomever else. That's not going to happen. And yeah, Steven Adams is going to get more touches this year than he did before, but, like, he's not DeMarcus Cousins as a guy you're going to give touches to. I mean, he's going to get more touches, and he'll probably get a couple touches in the post, and he'll be more active as a pick and roll scorer and that kind of stuff, and even a pick and roll creator, I think. But you know, a lot of these touches, they're going to Oladipo with Kevin Durant gone, and whether he steps up or not, they're going to let him continue to get those touches until he finally kind of finds his footing in Oklahoma City, which I think is going to happen, and I think they're anticipating is going to happen as well. Otherwise, they wouldn't have made that deal. So just by the mere fact that he has tons of leeway, I think he's eventually going to find it and end up having a really good season.
Yeah, and I think ultimately it comes down to kind of faith and trust and you know, kind of believing him a lot, and you know, Scott Skiles kind of doesn't always have that with people, but you know, like you said earlier, the way Oladipo finished the season last year again just made you really believe in him. He's due for big games, and you know, obviously, I think you give him the opportunity, he will shine for you. Whether, you know, the big question I think with Oladipo is whether doing that leads to wins, and I think having Westbrook there as kind of a buffer, as another guy who can attack, will be much more effective than it was in Orlando, where the Magic kind of turned the ball over to Oladipo, let him kind of do his thing, and the team just couldn't galvanize enough to get wins in the same way that I think they'll be able to with Westbrook. I mean, I think Oladipo is in a really good situation for him to continue to grow and improve.
I find him a really interesting player to discuss as a defender. I think you find people who think he's a phenomenal defender. I don't go that far. I think he's certainly a good defender. I also think he can be caught in the wrong spot every once in a while. Mm-hmm. He can get a little antsy, maybe jump a passing lane, and
he has trouble. He has trouble getting over and around screens sometimes too. But you just don't know if that was the strategy. I mean, Jacques Vaughn didn't have a great defensive strategy, and how much of it is I've got to do it this way because the defenders behind me aren't going to be able to recover if I can't get through this guy. And, you know, I think it's a constant development for Oladipo, and still something he's improving on, especially working off the ball as much as on the ball.
How do you think he's going to develop as a defender? I think we know what kind of defender he is right now, but he obviously has great defensive potential in terms of his physical attributes, the fact that he plays so damn hard, you know, his smarts. Like, he has tremendous defensive potential. Do you think he reaches that at some point? Where do you see him going as a defender in his career?
I mean, I think it really depends on, I say this, it feels like I'm saying this a lot about Oladipo. It really depends on the role you're asking him to play. If he is being asked to score a lot, I think that offensive pressure is going to take away from his ability to defend at a very, very high level. I think he's going to defend he's going to be a plus defender. I don't think he's going to be a negative defender ever for any team. But whether he can become an all defensive team player or something of a defensive specialist, I think it's going to really depend on what his role offensively is. And Oladipo is a guy who views himself as a future all-star, as a potential all-star. And I think, you know, you can't ignore him. You've got to let him get his shots up, kind of in the same way that we talked about with Ibaka. But he's going to be a guy who's going to defend a lot of the best twos in the league. If you need him to go try and guard Steph Curry for a while, I think you could probably rely on him to do at least a decent job on Stephen Curry. But he's got to still get a lot more discipline. Like you said, he tends to go for steals a little too much. He gets himself a little out of position sometimes, especially getting around screens. And, you know, that's such an important part of the game today that it's going to hold him back a little bit, but he's still a relatively young player. He's going to continue to learn and grow. And so I think, you know, looking at Oklahoma City, he's going to be a guy that they can rely on defensively to guard the best guard, at least, if, you know, probably not big enough to guard a small forward. So you don't want him on LeBron or Durant or anybody like that, but put him on Klay Thompson. He'll do a good job. You know, put him on Steph Curry for a while to mix things up. I think he'll do a decent enough job and enable the Thunder to have a good defense.
So Oladipo is not the only guy that the Thunder got in this deal. They also got Ilyasova. And, you know, he was only there for, what, a half a year in Orlando after coming over in that Tobias Harris trade, which I'm sure, you know, the Magic are still feeling their reverberations of. But but Ilyasova, his numbers went up a little bit when he was in Orlando, especially the rebounding numbers. Now, obviously, not playing next to Andre Drummond anymore will make anybody's rebounding numbers go up. But where do you see Ilyasova fitting? I mean, I think he's going to start for this Thunder team. I just think he makes the most sense next to Steven Adams from an offensive perspective. He'd be the only starter in the starting lineup who's an above-average three-point shooter for his position, which is something the Thunder need. They're kind of strapped for shooting. I mean, they have Anthony Morrow, they have the rookie Alex Abrines, and they have Ilyasova, and those are really the only three-point shooters who they have who we can say. I mean, unless Kyle Singler bounces back from his season last year and shoots his career percentage, which is certainly possible, but it's also not something that we necessarily need to bank on happening. You know, Ilyasova is really the only guy who we can say will consistently be in the rotation this year, because who knows on Abrines, second round pick, who, you know, is going to be a rookie this year, and you know, Morrow was in and out of the rotation last year. Ilyasova is really the only guy who I think is consistently going to be in the rotation without falling out of it this year, who's an above average shooter. And you know, unless Oladipo ups his shooting or Russ ups his shooting or something like that, he needs to start, I think, because of that. And you know, the defensive flaws or whatever else, the Thunder can deal with that by sticking him next to Steven Adams, who's a really good defender, a really good help defender, and can kind of, you know, I think they hope can kind of be a one-man defense, because he's such a good anchor and such a good rim protector that he can blow up enough pick and rolls and kind of annoy people enough on defense to where he can at least carry them into being a solid defensive team. What do you think of how Ilyasova fits into this roster? Because I think he fits pretty well offensively, though I do worry about kind of how the defense is going to work when he's not playing next to Steven Adams.
Yeah, I think when you actually sit down and look at the Thunder roster, he definitely fits what they're trying to do. And as a reliable veteran, it certainly is a good thing to have him out there. And he's reliable enough. Frankly, his 22-game run in Orlando, I was not impressed with him at all. His defense was a big problem, and of course Skiles was playing him over Aaron Gordon in certain situations, which frustrated Magic fans certainly because Gordon is more of the future than Ilyasova. The big reason Ilyasova was included in this deal was the Magic had no intention of keeping him. He was going to get cut before his guarantee date anyway, and so when I hear people kind of break down the trade and are like, oh, the Magic gave up so much. They gave up Oladipo, who, you know, a lot of people really like still, and they gave up Ilyasova, who's a quality veteran. And I was just like, did anybody watch him in Orlando? Like, he wasn't good, and the Magic weren't planning on keeping him. Having said that, yeah, Ilyasova is still good for what he does well, which is he shoots the ball pretty well. Is a better rebounder than people give him credit for, and he takes charges. So I mean, when he gets in defensive position, I think he led the league in charges taken last year. So he's someone that can do some good things. He's just got to bounce back, and his time in Orlando just was not good at all. I would venture to say that he was getting starters minutes or at least bench minutes. And I was telling people, I don't know if he's an NBA player anymore. So I'm much lower on Ilyasova than a lot of people. He played much better in Detroit than he did in Orlando. So if something's probably still there, he certainly can still probably produce at the level the Thunder need. But, you know, I guess my perspective on Ilyasova is colored by just how he just didn't play particularly well with the Magic and how his season ended. I wasn't satisfied at all with what he produced.
I think he's going to help this team. Now now I'm coming in for the more positive opinion. I think he's going to help this team. All he needs to do is shoot to help this team. And yeah, he's going to have issues on defense. There's no question about that. He's always had issues on defense. And, you know, it's funny. He's the oldest player on this team, and he's listed at 29 years old. And he's the oldest player. Wow. He's the oldest player on this team. I mean, there's him. He's 29. Russ is 27. And everybody else who could possibly be – I mean, you know, I'm not including Nick Collison. But everybody else who could possibly be in this rotation is between the ages of 20 and 24. So I think at least just bringing in somebody who's not 23 years old and who's a respected guy around the league honestly helps. I mean, I know people make jokes about veteran leadership and all that stuff, but there is value in that. And I do think having someone who's older than 27 years old, who's in your team's rotation, who's been in the league for a while, who's a respected personality around the league, I do think that there is value in that. And if he can do it while he's shooting, was he a 37% career shooter from three? If he can do that while being a big man, he shoots 37%. And more importantly, if he can force just defenders to guard him so that Russ and Oladipo can actually get into the lane, because that's the issue with not having shooting in the Thunder lineup. It's not that they're not going to hit threes. They don't need guys who are 40% shooters. What they need is guys who perimeter defenders are going to stay on, or at least are going to hesitate coming off of a little bit. They'll hesitate a little bit more when Oladipo drives, when Russ drives, because this entire offense is going to be predicated on penetration. And that's because they have Westbrook and because they have Oladipo, because that's the strength of those two guys. And the getting to the rim is what those guys do. They're so good at it. They're so explosive. They're so athletic. And that's kind of going to be their best offensive trait. That's because they're not going to shoot well. So that's how they're going to get their efficient offense, by shots at the rim, because Lord knows they're not going to do it with mid-range shots. And if they want to get to the rim more easily, they're going to need space, and they're going to need guys to just have someone who they can guard, which is why I advocate, honestly, for playing Singler. Because if Singler does shoot, you know, 37%, people are going to guard him. And that's all that they need to have an offensive impact from their perimeter players. They need someone to guard them, because no one's going to guard Robertson. And, you know, Kanter doesn't go out to the three-point line. If he does, then you lose his offensive rebounding. You know, Adams obviously has to be around the rim. So you have these guys, you know, Sabonis isn't a three-point shooter. So Ilyasova, I think, is going to provide so much value just as a guy who people guard on the perimeter. And he's a good shooter, and he's an okay screen setter, and you can ping and pop with him a little bit, and you can, you know, he can just stand out there and just stretch by merely standing and force a defender out there. Like, that value is going to help as long as he just shoots his career percentage. Look, if his three-point shooting plummets because he just has a bad year for whatever reason, then of course that's gonna hurt him, and that's gonna hurt him. It's gonna hurt the team. But if he just shoots his career percentage, he shoots 37%, 38%, something like that, and guys continue to guard him, I think he's gonna have. Now, I don't think he's gonna play 30 minutes, but I think for like 22 minutes a night in a starting role, he's gonna be legitimately able to help this team on the offensive end. And if you play those 22 minutes against Steven Adams, I think Adams is a good enough help defender to where he can mask some of those flaws where Ilyasova gets turned around on defense, or where you put him in the pick and roll and he kind of ends up, you know, looking like a revolving door in the pick and roll. You can at least have Adams on the back line helping, and Adams on the block coming over to help. And I think Adams is good enough to you know, kind of act as cover up for those sorts of mistakes. And while those aren't things that you want in your defense, I think the Thunder will still be more than capable. I think they're going to be a good defense, just because Adams and Robertson and Oladipo, and I think Billy Donovan's a good defensive coach, will help them get there. And, you know, Ilyasova's help on the offensive end, just from the shooting standpoint, will help them get to much better offensive levels.
And I think if he's doing all that, if he's, you know, if you're relying on him just to shoot threes, I think that will make him effective. He's still a pretty good 3-point shooter. When you give him the opportunities, he'll probably still hit that average. You know, one thing that's really underrated about him, though, is his offensive rebounding. He is a really kind of sneaky offensive rebounder. And so you can find ways to use that too. You know, he just had a really bad run for the Magic. So he left a bad taste in my mouth. So, you know, I feel like I'm in the minority that this is not quite on board the Ilyasova bandwagon, but certainly you use him correctly, spot up shooter, someone who can pick and pop a little bit, you know, sometimes get near the paint for post up or to get in offensive rebounding position. He'll be a benefit to your offense. I think right now he's more of a benefit to the offense than the defense. And the Magic didn't quite have the defensive structure around him, so it left him a little bit exposed defensively, I think. So if you come into a system that's a little bit better defensively, and certainly Billy Donovan runs a good defensive system, he's got good defensive players, I think that will be able to mask some of his deficiencies and allow him to contribute contribute a lot more positively to the Thunder than he did to the Magic.
You honestly, you just put him in the role that Serge Ibaka was in on offense.
Yeah, essentially, yeah.
You let him pick and pop. You let him stand there. You let him stretch the floor. You let him shoot catch and shoot threes. And that's you know, maybe some catch and shoot open mid-range shots. And that's what you got. That's what you get out of him. I think he's capable enough to be able to do that. And he's a good shooter. And I think he'll be able to provide some stretch doing it. Now, you're not going to play him at the five like you did with Ibaka. But I think offensively...
He doesn't have that positional versatility.
No. But I think just from... A simplistic offensive role that Ibaka was in, I think those concepts can carry over perfectly well enough to Ilyasova to make that transition like relatively seamless. Sabonis, I'm wondering, should Magic fans be upset that after drafting him, they're missing out on him?
You know, it depends where you fall on the Sabonis scale. I was not like a huge Sabonis fan. I think he's a traditional four in a world where there are no more traditional fours. And so I think he's going to be a quality guy to bring off the bench, perhaps, for most of his career. He's got some great offensive skill, but, you know, he's going to have to learn defense pretty quickly. And, you know, I'm, you know, for where the Magic were at, I felt they were trading that pick, you know, almost no matter what from the time the trade deadline happened till beyond, because, you know, they're looking to make the playoffs now. And I'm not sure Sabonis quite would help the Magic in that quest in the same way that bringing in a veteran would. So, you know, I think the Serge Ibaka deal is kind of the exact deal I was looking for the Magic to make using the assets that I thought they needed to look to move, which would be Ilyasova and his expiring contract, because he was guaranteed, I think, only $2 of the $8 million or $6 of the $8 million, something like that, if he was cut before July 1st. You know, so the Magic were cutting him anyway. And I don't think they felt like they wanted to wait on another rookie to make an impact. And so it felt like an asset they were going to move anyway, unless there was someone that absolutely blew them away. And Sabonis, you know, Sabonis is good. I think he'll be solid. I think he'll play that role well, but he's not someone that I think would move the needle for a Magic team that's a little bit desperate, to be frank. And so, you know, maybe Magic fans will regret not having Sabonis. I think they do have some front court, I feel like they need a traditional power forward a little bit right now. But, you know, they've got Aaron Gordon, who I think is going to play some minutes at the four. Jeff Green can do that too. So I don't think the Magic are going to be missing him significantly at this point.
I think he's got a nice chance to be the fourth big man this year. Mm-hmm. I think in Oklahoma City. I think there's now the LaVern trade kind of changes things a little bit. I don't know if they like LaVern or they like Sabonis more. We'll kind of learn more about that during the preseason when we see where Billy Donovan has his rotations, and we honestly see how both of those guys play, and we see how well Sabonis is adapting to the NBA game and the NBA style. But I think he's got a legitimate chance to be the fourth big and get 15 minutes a night behind Kanter and behind Adams and behind Ilyasova. I think it's a possibility. He's pretty switchy on defense, which is a nice thing. Like he can defend away from the rim a little bit, which is obviously a necessary trait for a four in today's NBA. And he can't shoot threes, but I think one of the hopes with him is that he'll be able to develop a 3-point shot within the mm-hmm. within the coming years. And if that's the case. Because he's not a bad. It's not like he can't shoot mid-range shots. And
no, he's a great offensive player already.
Right. I mean, he's got his flaws on offense. Like he's so much better with his left hand than he is with his right hand. But he's got good post moves and he's got great footwork around the basket and he's a good shooter from mid-range. And I think the Thunder are hoping that in the next few years, you know, I'm not talking this year, I'm not talking next year, but at some point, you know, by the time we're talking, he's only 20. By the time he hits his prime, he's a 3-point shooter, and all of a sudden you have a stretch four who can be a little switchy on defense, and you have a really quality third big man. And, you know, if you get that with the 11th pick, and then I think you can call that a really solid pick.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what it is. Like, I'm not saying he's going to have a bad NBA career. He's going to be a bust or anything. I think he will be a very solid NBA player, be able to give, like you said, some good bench minutes, like 20, 24 minutes per game, probably at his peak. I see him kind of capped off as a bench guy, maybe a spot starter at the power forward position in his career. He's ready to contribute pretty immediately, I think, for the Thunder. I think he probably would have been too for the Magic as well. And so, you know, he's a good pick. He's a good player. I'm not quite sold that he'll be a full-time starter in the league, but a solid player nonetheless. You know, I think it was tough for the Magic to give him up. I think that was a player they were looking at. But at the same time, you know, the Magic needed to make a splash or needed to go out and get a really good player and knew they had to give up something to get it. And so I think they were willing to part with a rookie to do that.
Before we finish up, Gabe, tell the people about Locked On Magic.
Locked On Magic, it's obviously the daily podcast covering the Orlando Magic, talking pretty much anything going on with the Magic. Obviously, more will be going on very, very soon. You can follow me on Twitter at @OMagicDaily. I'm usually pretty responsive to any questions. I'll answer a few on the show as well. And we're doing our crossover week as well. We had Locked On Heat to talk a little bit about Sunshine State basketball, and of course have some other good guests planned later on in the week as well.
Anything else to plug? Anything at Omagic Daily you want to plug?
You know, I'm doing player profiles right now. If you're listening to this on the Locked On Magic feed, I'll probably be talking about our next player in our player outlook series as we count down to training camp. I did Aaron Gordon earlier this week, as well as Frank Vogel for their outlooks for the upcoming season. As we're just excited to get some basketball again.
Yes, we are. And remember, I'm on every weekday now, Monday through Friday. This week, it's all crossover episodes. Think of a crossover episode as just hosting another Locked On host, like I'm doing with Phil right now. Going to be talking, well, we just talked Ibaka, I should say. And if you're subscribed to the show, you'll be all good on getting those. I got more in the future for the rest of the week. You can head out to iTunes and subscribe there as well. And subscribe to Locked On Magic if you're feeling like it too. If you have any questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter @FredKatz, FREDKATZ. And log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs. And check out Thunder Road. That's my blog there under the sports tab on the site to follow team coverage and what's next for the Thunder. That's going to do it for today. I'm back with you tomorrow for more Thunder and NBA talk. Until next time, though, Locked On Thunder is locking up.